Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Thank you for joining us for Homefront. Today we're greeted with Chuck Baldwin. Chuck Baldwin is the founder and pastor of Crossroads Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida, and he now is the pastor of Liberty Fellowship in Montana. He was the presidential nominee of the Constitution Party for the 2008 U.S. presidential election and ran for vice president in 2004. Chuck hosts a daily one-hour program called Chuck Baldwin Live, and he writes a daily editorial column for News with Views. So thank you, Chuck. I'm glad to have you here. Welcome.
It's great to be with you, Cynthia. Thank you very much.
You were a previous Republican Party member. That's some link that we have in common. I was also previously deeply submerged in the Republican Party. I spent many years as a Missouri state legislator as a Republican and was involved with the party politics, too. I was actually the chairman of the St. Charles County Republican Central Committee. So you were involved with the Florida Moral Majority down there. And then after decades of being with the Republican Party, you left the party. You decided you're going to run as a Constitution Party candidate. What were you thinking? Did you believe you could win?
Well, that was a long story, how all that came about. As you know, I campaigned very aggressively for Ron Paul during the primary. I campaigned in states like South Carolina, Iowa, Florida, Alabama, and if Ron Paul had won the primary, I would no doubt have continued to support him and would not have run. But when he lost the primary, many of his supporters and team members approached me about the possibility of launching a independent party bid for the purpose of keeping the message going. They knew that John McCain was not going to deliver the Constitution message. And so after some prayer and deliberation about that, I decided to pursue it, won the nomination, and became the candidate, and for the next 6 months traveled all over the country and represented constitutional government to the American people. Unfortunately, I found that the mainstream media is extremely hostile to any candidate who is not a Democrat or a Republican. It's a very controlled election process, and it was hard for us to get on the programs and the interviews, etc. Lou Dobbs actually defied his own CNN producers when he had me on his show. And it's very interesting that a few months later, he was fired from CNN. Of course, that's just a coincidence, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
But, anybody who thinks that we have free and fair elections in America just doesn't really understand how fixed the game really is. So I learned a lot. It was an eye-opening experience. Met a lot of wonderful people. Traveled to every state in the country except four, and just had a tremendous time, getting out there, promoting the principles of constitutional government. I don't think there's any question that unless a third-party candidate is going to be able to somehow break through the roadblocks that are placed in front of him or her by the mainstream media, which denies access to the ears and hearts of the American people, it's going to be very, very difficult for a third-party candidate to win. a general election.
Did you have a different experience when you were running for vice president in 2004?
No, it wasn't different, except in 2004 as the vice presidential candidate, I didn't have the travel time. I wasn't the main candidate, and so I didn't travel as much, and I wasn't exposed as much to the finer workings of the campaign. And, you learned that when I became the presidential candidate.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm just a little bit younger than you, and I was in the Missouri State Legislature as a Republican when the MIAC report was released. That stands for the MIAC stands for the Missouri Information Analysis Center. And during that time, it was really quite interesting because it was my duty as a legislator to somewhat be umpire with all these bureaucratic entities the state had created. It was said in the report that those who support Chuck Baldwin and Ron Paul are supposed to be terrorist suspects. Now, it also said people who put a Gadsden flag in their on their car or have a bumper sticker or display a Gadsden flag might be terrorists as well. And so the first reaction I had was to quickly put up a Gadsden flag in my office.
Good for you.
My assistant didn't like that. She actually removed it when I wasn't looking, and I had to go put it back and explain to her that we are not afraid of some bullies in a bureaucratic entity, that is wrong. It's flat wrong. And here's the scary part. I had somebody who came into my office and said, I support Chuck Baldwin, too. And I'm sorry to tell you this. At that time, I didn't know the difference between Chuck Baldwin, Chuck Norris, and Chuck Yeager.
Okay.
I knew I'd heard the name somewhere, but it didn't ring a bell. And I know that we have to get above the waterline, but I appreciate the bad people putting out that Missouri Information terrorist bulletin because it woke me up. When I saw that people who are pro-life and in favor of Ron Paul and in favor of Chuck Baldwin being named as potential terrorists, and the Constitution Party, that actually was when my eyes got open. Maybe this Constitution Party is worthy of my investigation because they must be doing something. Instead of me being afraid of them, it more endeared me to everybody who was an innocent victim. Anybody who's gone through an airport knows that, as you and I have done quite a bit, that if I looked a little more like I must be a Muslim, I'd probably have an easier time getting through than being an American legislator. So when did you hear about that MIAC report, and what was your reaction to it?
Oh, boy, well, I heard right away. I got the calls from, well, I think it was Alex Jones that actually was the first one to alert me on it. He got tipped off by a police officer in the state of Missouri who, I guess, got the first report, and he alerted Alex. Alex was the first one that really broke the story, and he contacted us. Bob Barr, Ron Paul, myself, and so then of course we checked it out, make sure it was truthful, and it was indeed. Well, then I immediately wrote a column. I'm a syndicated columnist, and I wrote a column about it, and that boy, then it went viral all over the country, and as you know, millions of people contacted the offices there in the state of Missouri. And they eventually wound up, retracting and bringing it down. And I think they reassigned the person in charge. But, the damage had been done. And unfortunately, since then, this kind of thing goes on around the various states pretty commonly. I had a deputy sheriff friend of mine one day stop by my office and said, I want to show you something in my computer, in my squad car. I went out there and, excuse me, Cynthia, and I looked at what he was showing me, and he was showing me some names of some just really, really wonderful people that were coming to town that I had invited to speak. speak. People like Dr. Greg Dixon, the former pastor of the Indianapolis Baptist Temple, and he showed me a similar alert on his computer, and watch out for this person, known right-wing extremist connections, you know, possibly dangerous, you know, and the police are getting these kind of reports all the time, and in their squad rooms and their squad cars, and it's all coming from the Southern Poverty Law Center. This is the organization that feeds these kind of announcements to the fusion centers at Homeland Security, and through the fusion centers, then they are distributed to the various state and local police departments. So nothing has really changed since then. I think they learned a lesson a little bit about the wordage. They're a little bit more careful, I think, in the way they word it, because, you know, they described, you know, people who voted for or had bumper stickers for, you know, three independent party presidential candidates, and two of them were former U.S. congressmen. Well, at that time, Ron Paul still was a congressman. Bob Barr was a former congressman from Georgia. So two of the three were actually U.S. congressmen, and of course, I've been a pastor all my adult life, and to use the, you know, the verbiage that people who might support us could be dangerous, potentially dangerous militia extremists, you know, they really got egg on their face with that one, and so they're trying to be a little more careful on how they do it, but they're still doing the basic same thing all over the country.
Yeah, I can tell they are, because the attitude hasn't changed, although they might as well have thrown in all the stay-at-home moms, and next thing you'll know, they will put in homeschoolers. So there is an effort to suppress good people, and meanwhile, we're not seeing the evil being dealt with, the true evil. Nevertheless, I ran for Lieutenant Governor on the Constitution Party ticket just last November. I spent 14 months working full-time on the campaign, answered every survey, was interviewed on TV and radio in nearly every media market. I showed up at every public forum, did robocalls, mass mailings, newspaper, had billboards, big signs, yard signs, did everything humanly possible, and still had a disappointing turnout. So what are we supposed to do if the electoral process is not open to people who are trying to make a difference?
Yeah, that's a great question, Cynthia, and that's what all of the independent party thinkers have tried to come up with to answer that question. And unfortunately, we're dealing with a lot of things that are happening at one time. You know, you're dealing with a controlled media, and you're also dealing with an uninformed electorate. Because the media dominates the news and information that people hear, read, etc., the, you know, independent party candidates are not seen as viable, even though there have been several examples where third-party candidates have prevailed. I mean, Jesse Ventura was elected governor of Minnesota. We have a governor in New Mexico. That was elected. These are both Libertarian Party candidates. But, you know, but that's the exception, not the rule. And then on the presidential level, you got, you know, people like Ross Perot, who, you know, at first did a tremendous job of campaigning. And, you know, if certain things would have gone differently, I think Ross Perot had a fighting chance of actually winning. There were several things that he did to, I think, stub his own toe. But the, you know, and I don't know, the American people have it in their mind that a third-party candidate can't win. I mean, that's the preconception that they have going into it. And then when you add the fact that the media, for the most part, will not give the third-party candidate a real forum to address the people. Now, I don't know what you found there in Missouri. I would venture to say that most of the exposure that you had in Missouri, you had to, in one way or another, purchase or create for yourself. I don't know how accessible the mainstream media was to you in terms of really getting your message out. I'm sure you had a real problem with that. So that is the handicap that they have. Not only that, the people that have money that would be available, they're reluctant to give it because, you know, well, they don't want to support a person that, you know, they don't think can win. You know, although there are people that will do it if, you know, they got an election loss. I had a man, a retired medical doctor, in my campaign in 08 that wanted to give me $2 million to help my campaign. Now, you know, that's a drop in the bucket compared to what the hundreds of millions that the two major party candidates have access to. But that was that would have really helped us. But, you know, you got campaign laws which prevent that kind of thing from happening. So, the deck is stacked in favor of the two major parties. And I don't really know if there is a political way to resolve this or not. Until the American people come to the recognition that, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, each party is in office, that the same basic agenda is going forward. Until the American people kind of wake that and bring themselves out of that slumber that they're in, and then begin themselves to, you know, assert an energy into the direction of, you know, we're not going to go along with the two-party system. I'm not sure exactly what the party's going to be able to do to break through.
Hi, friends. Do you like what you're hearing? Then go to my website. It's CynthiaDavis.net and sign up for my newsletter. You'll get all this information and more when you sign up for my email reminding you of when you'll hear another podcast and letting you know what's coming up next. Besides, we always have a little bit of humor at the end, so go to CynthiaDavis.net and stay in the loop. For those of you who don't like email, go to my Facebook page. It's called Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And make sure you click the like button. That way, you'll have a convenient way to see what we're doing and to get the word when another podcast is released. That's Homefront with Cynthia Davis on Facebook. My website is CynthiaDavis.net. That's where we keep all our good stuff. So if you want to get our newsletter and find more podcasts, go to CynthiaDavis.net. Hey, let's stay in touch. Well, you put your name on the ballot to run for lieutenant governor in Montana. And you might call it a false start because you announced you were running for lieutenant governor as a Republican, and then even as a Republican, the money didn't come in, and the people didn't show up. As what happened in Montana that made you decide, even as a Republican, you couldn't win?
Yeah, well, that was not because of the things we're talking about now. The gentleman that asked me to be his running mate in Montana, you don't run independently. The governor and the lieutenant governor run together as a team, like the president and vice president. Lieutenant governor is chosen by the gubernatorial candidate. It's not an independent election, independent office. So I was invited to join that gubernatorial candidate's team as his lieutenant governor. There were four or five criteria that I gave him at the beginning of the campaign. These were things that we had to accomplish. You know, I didn't want to do it as a token race, as a token campaign. I wanted to do it to win. And so there were certain things I knew that we had to accomplish by certain times. Part of it was fundraising. Part of it was building a staff, grassroots organization, et cetera, et cetera. And the gentleman just was not either able or willing to do what needed to be done to put together a winning campaign. Halfway through the, 3 months into the race, I recognized that the campaign was not going to go forward in earnest, and I had no control over it. It wasn't my campaign. I wasn't the main guy. And so, you know, I informed him first, and then I tried to graciously bow out of the campaign, recognizing that the campaign was not going to be successful, not because we couldn't get the votes, but because the individual just wasn't able or willing to do what had to be done.
Was that your first time running as a Republican for public office?
Yes, it was.
And do you think you'll run again sometime for some office? And what party?
Yeah, we'll see.
What party?
We'll see, Cynthia. It depends on, you know, the time and what the office might be and circumstances. And, you know, yeah, I'm not saying that I wouldn't. I would say that I have to weigh it very carefully and make sure it's what I would feel I would need to do. But, yeah, I'm not saying that I wouldn't.
What party would you run on?
Here in Montana, the Constitution Party is no longer a valid party. We've lost ballot access. You know, every state is different in its election laws, as you know. And after the 2008 election and then going into the 2010 elections statewide here in Montana, the rules regulating the maintenance of ballot access dictated that the Constitution Party did not qualify. So right now in the state of Montana, I would not even be able to run as a Constitution Party candidate because we do not have ballot access.
Well,
unless the state party in Montana were to, you know, to aggressively rebuild the party and the ballot again, there is no Constitution Party as far as the elections office is concerned in Montana because of access.
Okay, so one thing I would like to compliment you for is that you do stay out in the public view. You write a newsletter and you do your broadcast. I also write a weekly newsletter and do a weekly broadcast. But I would, one thing I love about your newsletter is you explain yourself. We can all learn a lesson from the good pastor of how to work with the public in making a difference. One of your newsletters I particularly enjoyed was the one where you explained why you moved to Montana. And to quote you, you said, "For one thing, it became very plain to me that my ministry was over in Pensacola. The brook had dried up, to borrow from the life of Elijah, and I've known too many pastors who allowed their personal affections for a prolonged ministry obfuscate the clear revelation and reality that their ministries had ended and it was time to move on." So I love the idea that you said, "We're not going to beat the dead horse. God wants me elsewhere." That's noble and that's honorable. So then you did another newsletter where you explained very beautifully why Montana. And you said, "If I'm correct in my analysis, Montana and surrounding states really is in store for the freedom rush that patriotic businessmen, laborers, tradesmen, professionals, clergymen, physicians, technicians, and people from virtually every walk of life will find themselves among the gathering of eagles." So I love that, you know, let me ask you, now that you've been there for a couple years, about almost 3 years now, is there really a freedom rush happening in the mountain states?
No, there's no question. No question about it. I guess just since we've been here, and we're in one small valley in the state, it is, I don't know, I suppose we have had, well, if you include all the families that do not come to Liberty Fellowship, probably well in excess of 50 families that have moved here over the last 24 months. I'd say 35 of those families are people that worship with us at Liberty Fellowship. But there's many other families that come that, you know, have no connection to Liberty Fellowship, or they prefer to worship at another church. So it's really hard to gauge just how many people have moved here in the last couple of years, but it's scores of families in all likelihood, and it's not slowing down. And the thing about it is that a lot of people are not moving to Montana. They're moving to Idaho. They're moving to Wyoming and surrounding states. I think Montana seems to be the tip of the spear of it all, and I do think that more people seem to be relocating to Montana than to the other states. But there's no question that there is a gathering of eagles, as I said, among patriot, liberty-loving people deciding to relocate to this part of the country. That is absolutely no question.
So you said in your newsletter, Chicago is why people in Illinois are losing their liberties. Baltimore is why the people of Maryland are losing their liberties. Atlanta is why people in Georgia are losing their liberties. St. Louis and Kansas City, that's Missouri. I'm from Missouri, so of course you're saying that St. Louis and Kansas City have wrecked it for the state. I understand what you're saying, and you're saying even in Washington State, which has some of the finest patriots ever created, Seattle is ruining Washington State. And I'm so sorry, but as they're moving there, are they going to be getting ballot access back for the Constitution Party, or are they going to be sending more Republicans to Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, I really don't know the status of that. You know, the party leaders here in Montana, they know what they have to do to regain ballot access. And, you know, it's going to be up to them to do that. I can say this, too, that my comments there, what I was referring to, I was kind of building off of what Thomas Jefferson said when he said that big metropolitan areas were the bane of freedom. That's his phrase, the bane of freedom. And when you look at the states that you just mentioned, you know, there's so many great, wonderful conservative people in the states, whether New York, Chicago, name it, Oregon. But when you look at the big cities that dominate the politics of the state, it's filled with liberalism, filled with socialism, big government types of people that really do, they clamor for more government control. They clamor for more government subsidies, and the welfare system is burgeoning like nobody's business, and the police state is growing like crazy, and people seem to not only tolerate it, but seem to desire that in the big city markets. Well, then when you recognize that a big city like Chicago and Illinois, for example, has more population than the entire rest of the state in terms of political power, that's for sure, the people in the rest of the state are almost without a voice when it comes to state politics. The same thing's true in California, Arizona, Texas, Florida, the big cities of these states are dominating the politics, and that's why, you know, we're not seeing the real progress in terms of constitutional government. You're fighting these big government neocons in the Republican Party or the big government liberals in the Democrat Party that prevail in these big cities. That's one of the reasons we selected Montana, is because there is no big metropolitan area anywhere in the state that controls the politics of the state. It's a much more rural state, and, you know, the power is more evenly divided throughout the people of the state, which we found attractive. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have problems here, just like other states we do. Montana is kind of a purple state. They call it that because it's almost evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats, and it has much more of a libertarian streak to it, the people of the state, I mean. And they tend to go one way or the other, depending on who the individual candidate is.
We are watching a general darkening of America every year. If you look at the country in the aggregate, you can't avoid seeing there's an increase in homosexuality, promiscuity, pornography, gambling, drug use, broken homes, homes that were never even formed in the first place, but they're having babies. Profanity, vulgar language on TV, and all this is happening at the same time there's a decrease in church attendance. So let me ask you, is there a political answer for guiding the direction of our country?
Well, of course, no, not ultimately. I think we both understand that. Politics is many times the reflection and not the determination. So no, ultimately, you know, we all have to recognize that nations rise and fall according to the natural laws of God. And whenever a society ignores the natural laws of God, that society is not going to long survive. So ultimately, we as a people are going to answer to God, and the politics is not going to be the ultimate answer in success or failure. However, I will say that what we have today is a completely disconnected church. The church itself, especially so many of the pastors, do not understand the biblical principles of natural law, do not understand their duties under God politically, socially, etc., have divorced themselves from the process to the point now that the church is virtually ineffective in influencing the country toward the principles that we're talking about here. And there's several reasons for that. In fact, in my column last week, I wrote on that, and I'm writing on it again this week in my column. Until we get the churches engaged, and the pastors especially, informed, understanding the issues, understanding what is their biblical duty and calling relative to the political life of our country, I don't think there's going to be any change. I really blame the pulpits of America for the condition that we are in today.
Well, we are running low on time, and I am so enlightened that you would call us. Is there something you would like to tell our listeners? That what should we do? What are we supposed to be doing right now to help guide the direction of the country back on the tracks again?
Thank you, Cynthia. Can I give my website so people can find me on the web?
Yes.
It's ChuckBaldwinLive.com. It's all one word. ChuckBaldwinLive.com. My columns are posted there, and there's a ton of information, contact information, etc., on the website, ChuckBaldwinLive.com. My son Tim and I wrote a couple of books that I think your listeners might enjoy reading. To Keep or Not to Keep, Why Christians Should Not Give Up Their Guns is the latest book. We prove from the Bible that not only is the Second Amendment a right that's guaranteed in the Constitution, it's also a duty prescribed in the Scriptures. And we show that at no place does God's Word demand that Christian people disarm themselves in the face of any would-be tyrant. We prove that from the Bible. The other book, Romans 13, The True Meaning of Submission, we try to correct this fallacious interpretation of Romans 13 that Christians should obey the government no matter what. The Bible doesn't teach that, never did. Romans 13 doesn't teach that. So we go into the Scripture and we show the clear meaning of Romans 13. And I think those are two books that are very important to what's happening today. Until the Christian church comes to an understanding of those two issues, I don't know that we're ever going to be able to turn it around. I think, again, the pastors have got to get educated, informed, they've got to get involved. The Christians have got to stop supporting these pastors that will not take a stand. They've got to start supporting the true, courageous preachers out there that are in the fight. And until the Christians and the churches begin to awaken and get involved, I don't think we can expect other people to awaken and get involved. In fact, sometimes non-Christians are more awake and more energized than many Christians are, and it's a shame. So I think that this is the direction that we've got to go, and I'm involved in trying to get people into these churches that are preaching the truth and not afraid of the IRS and the 501c3 tax exempt status, you know, all this kind of thing. I think all these are very germane to what we're talking about here, and I'm focusing on trying to educate people on these issues, and thankfully we've got Black Regiment pastors that are starting up churches all over the country. We have independent churches that are not 501c3 that are springing up everywhere. Many Christians are recognizing that their pastors are leading the sheep to the slaughter by their unwillingness to get involved, and they're getting out of those 501c3 churches, and they're finding, you know, the good pastors that will take a stand. So there is a lot of positive. It's just that we're so far behind the curve, we're so far in the hole, that we got a long way to go quickly. And I just hope we can do it fast enough.
Well, thank you, Chuck, for being on our show today. We have run out of time, but it's been a pleasure and a delight. Will you come back again sometime?
Oh, yes. Be happy to, Cynthia.
Yeah, because we have a few more. I mean, we just scratched the surface. We have not yet begun to fix the country. So it's been great having you. I just want to say thank you, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Chuck.
I look forward to it. Thank you, Cynthia.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.